accidentally yesterday I was sharing in my other capacity a meeting of review of rules of parliament, and as we were busy drafting the rules, the issue of ensuring that committees of parliament maintain the multi-party character of our democracy as mandated or dictated by our constitution. I'm looking around and I'm seeing on our agenda we have important issues to deal with, and yet we are not constituted in a manner that reflects the multi-party character of our committee. So I suspect we will not make much progress today by way of decision making. We'll probably make progress otherwise, except insofar as decision that needs to be taken are concerned. As you can see from the agenda, we need to entertain input from the audit committee, because as you'd recall, we are heading for a bit of a challenge because the external auditors who act as independent auditors of the Office of the Auditor General have since merged with another firm in circumstances that result in potential conflict of interest, and therefore we need to look at the question as to how do we deal with the situation, be it in the short term and medium to long term. So that's the one issue that we're going to receive input on from the audit committee. The second matter is the budget and start plan, which we started already with the week before last. We need to conclude our briefing on that. In that regard, the researcher has since circulated a document which I hope was also given to the Office of the Auditor General so that they have notice of it, so that when we engage on that, they are able to respond to the issues arising therefrom. The oversight reports have since been revised, and the idea was to beef them up. So we'll hear as to, you know, where we are with them, and we'll see how we're going to proceed. And finally, the REMCO issue. Again, especially because we are not seated in a multi-party format, an issue like this does need political buy-in from all the parties represented in the committee, because of its importance. So I don't see how we're going to be able to make a decision today on that or any other. All right, so that's my way of introducing the agenda. Let me start with apologies, and then I'll just check if people have comment on the agenda. Do we have any apologies, Secretary?
Yes, Chairperson. We have an apology from Professor Ndaba Dawa. Something better to respond. We have an apology from Dr. George of the DA, Mr. Steele, DA, and then also from Mr. Singh of the ISD.
Mm-hmm. All right. That next week, Friday, is the very last opportunity for us to sit this year. So whatever we cannot decide today, we will have to decide next week, Friday, or else it stands over until God knows when, January next year or not. So hopefully we will know beforehand next week who is coming and who is not, so that we plan accordingly. It can be very frustrating to only discover on the day of the meeting who's going to be in the meeting and who's not. So I'd really like to urge the committee secretary to make sure that we have that information in time so that we can make the necessary planning ahead of time. All right. Let's then proceed. That is the proposed agenda. We'll receive briefings. We won't make decisions on anything because, one, we don't have quorum, judging from the apologies as well. But two, some of the decisions, as I said, ideally, we should take them when we are constituted in a multi-party format. So, yeah, that's my suggestion. If there's nobody with a comment on the agenda, then we will proceed to receive the first briefing, which is from the Audit Committee. Please proceed.
Thanks, thanks very much, Chairman. Good morning to the members. Chair, the last time that we met, we agreed on the process to appoint the external auditors in the Office of the Auditor General, and we set about doing that. Unfortunately, there are a few things that have happened which have made it difficult for us to make an appointment. We're actually hoping that today we're going to come and give you the results of that process. After we met here, we advertised the tender and we met as the Audit Committee on the 27th of October to consider the tenders. Only two tenders were received, and we felt as the Audit Committee that we did not have enough information to finalize the evaluation process. Part of that was unfortunately in the way that the adverts had been and the information that was supplied, which was there were slight differences on what had been approved. So as the Audit Committee, we felt we needed to make sure that the adverts and what was approved by SCOAC on our recommendation were exactly the same. So we actually felt that we needed to re-advertise the tender with clearly stipulated criteria to ensure that all the relevant information was available to enable us to appoint an external auditor. So the tender has since been re-advertised in all the Business Day and the Sunday Times, clearly stipulating the required criteria with the closing date of November the 10th. And the Audit Committee is going to meet on the 11th of November to evaluate to evaluate the bid to select an audit firm that it can recommend to SQUAG for the appointment of the external auditor. And we were planning to meet with SQUAG on the 19th of November, but from what I'm hearing, it might actually be a challenge to table our recommendation. If it is not possible for us to meet, we think that possibly the standing committee should delegate the decision to the chair of SQUAG to finalize the appointment based on the recommendation from the audit committee. We are asking for this because, quite frankly, we need to have the appointment by the end of November so that whatever firm that is appointed can plan the audit. Because if we can't do that, we start compromising the financial reporting in the office of the Auditor General, and it will be a sad day if the office cannot submit their financials on the at the required time. We did have a brief discussion, Chair, that in the event that the firms that come forward do not meet the criteria set out, we possibly need to have a plan B. And we will be asking that a consideration be given to reappointing Moore Stevens, because otherwise we're actually caught in a very, very difficult situation that the office cannot have auditors that meet the criteria that was set out. Because the appointment is also a very important thing. We also, one of the audit committee members had planned, and it had been agreed, that she was going to retire from the committee at our November meeting. But because this is an important thing where we have to finalize the audit plan in early January, we've also asked her to reconsider resigning from the committee until after the January meeting. So some of the approvals that we would like from SQUAG is for SQUAG to approve the proposed process, i.e. we've gone ahead and re-advertised. I mean, we've not in exactly the same criteria that you approved, I think it was September. And then if Parliament is already in recess, for SQUAG to delegate authority to the chair to finalize the process together with the audit committee, and for you to approve a contingency plan to reappoint Moore Stevens if no suitably qualified alternate firm is identified. I want to be upfront here, Chair, and say we have not even spoken to Moore Stevens and said there is anything happening, because we needed to have a chat with you. And by the way, it is not given that they will agree to do it. I think, Adil, that's it, yeah, from our side.
Can I just ask if we were to say proceed with say a meeting of the 19th, which is at this stage almost like an impossibility, what guarantee would there be that we would be ready to consider a recommendation for appointment come that date? I'm just thinking, playing the devil's advocate. that maybe in any case we are confronted with the reality that come the 19th anyway, we wouldn't necessarily be sure that we'd be ready to make an appointment.
From our point, Chair, we will definitely be ready, because the closing date for the submission of the proposals is Wednesday the 10th. We are meeting on Thursday the 11th, and we will actually be in a position to make recommendations. Like we said, if nobody meets the criteria, we'll then be thinking of talking to more students. In fact, if you agree with that thinking, we will, after this meeting, we'll give them a call, assess whether they'll be willing to do that, so that whatever happens, we are in a position to come up with a firm proposal by the end of Thursday next week.
Anyway, yes, colleagues, Comrade Whip.
I would like to know if, because yes, as mentioned, they haven't spoken to Stephen. What if Stephen refused? What would happen?
All right, let's take a few comments or questions. Is there anybody else? Yes, Honorable Stephen.
Thank you, Comrade Chair. And I want to speak on the issue of the Stephen issue. I just want to speak on the issue of the time frame. That I'm not sure, Comrade Whip, that the 19th, in fact the 18th is the closing of Parliament.
Yeah.
But the committees will continue, because I think constituency week starts on the 24th. I'm not sure. I just want to verify that with the Whip.
Yeah.
That means members of Parliament will be still in committees, will be still in Parliament after the 18th. We'll only be on recess from the 24th or the 25th of November. If we can check the term frame in regard to that.
Another proposal would be, if a male chair were behind in some position, and that one has to know that there is a problem to the union that we didn't need. There are some of us that just have to present that we have some very issues. But maybe to push out this thing, maybe you could try by next week to know that it was Friday. My feeling is that we might have the same problem. That was really not the very bad at all. I won't be able to do anything that we're supposed to do. So I'll probably give you a check if we are not having us to check all of us. If you remember last week, I told you that when I was still the chairperson of the House, he said committees can meet till late, as long as arrangements have been made.
Yeah.
So if you plead with other members, that because we know that I won't say, I'm never going to be in Parliament. Okay. I have been meeting the committee. This I'm saying, if we meet maybe sometime next week during the week to deal with all these issues, including some delegated authority to you. The other worrying factor is the Remco issue. But, Chair, we have tried many times, we have tried even today, we thought today would be the day. You are not still for me, your forum. So, my own fear is also that maybe next week Friday we can also, there's no forum. Then there's a problem. This I'm saying. Maybe we should look into one day around next week. So all my own members will check who is available in that time so that we deal with some of the issues.
Hmm.
As long as we have documents in front of us, especially on the Remco issue, I remember yesterday when we met at the Telecom, we didn't have the documents. So they revised some final recommendations.
Hmm.
If we can have those documents in our meeting, if we finalize with other parties, then it can also form part of the delegated powers to you, as long as they have copies in front of us. So my worry also on the Remco issue is on the member. Some members ask a question that in those recommendations, you know that the AG haven't had this salary increase for the past 2-3 years. What is going to happen? Next month is already December. It might affect even that other part. So we agree that to avoid that part, we must approve this increase for them.
All right. Well, on the issue of delegation, I just want to indicate that we can obtain advice, but I'm not sure if, be it the rules or the act in terms of which we derive our authority, provide for that form of delegation. What committees normally do is that they form subcommittees that look at issues but bring back to plenary of the committee, which is the full committee, which then decides. It is the full committee that normally makes the final say on issues. But we can always double check those matters with the table staff. But in any case, I think that we should always strive to look at the possibility of securing a proper meeting of the committee where decisions could be made. Yes, we were told in uncertain terms that if you're a Friday committee, you're a Friday committee unless you're dealing with legislation where you get exemption to meet on other days as well. I think that the circumstances are such that the business that we need to dispose of, if it is not possible to dispose of it on a Friday, as in the last Friday before the House or Parliament rises, which is next week Friday, we might still want to consider making a special request to have a special sitting of the committee during the last week of Parliament, meaning the week that ends on the 19th, but possibly meet during the course of the week as opposed to Friday the 19th itself. Because even if we were to get approval to sit after Parliament has gone on recess as a committee, prospects of us having not only members of SCOEC, but generally having members in the corridor, that we might be able to co-opt to come and help us make a quorum, will be even more remote. I think after the 18th, this place will be empty. In fact, people will be here on the 18th only if there's a three-line week or something. So I would suggest that let's try next week, Friday, to deal with as many decisions as we can, obviously excluding the issue of the appointment of a new set of auditors, and if the situation is such that we did not secure full attendance, the full house, then let's use any day between Tuesday and Thursday of the week of the 19th to get a meeting. We'll call a meeting on the Tuesday, we'll probably even request, if there's no voting on both, even if there's voting on both, we may have to request a seat during the meeting and possibly get a venue like this where we can just walk over if we have to vote and then come back and finalize. And the advantage of during the meeting is that you can always borrow members. You can always rent the crowd nearby, because everybody is in the house. So I'd suggest that we deal with the matter in that fashion. We'll have our normal meeting next week.
try and make as many decisions there. If we have a problem, the following last week of the 19th, we'll try to sit on a Tuesday. If we can't succeed, we'll try and sit on a Wednesday. If we don't succeed, I hope we don't end up having to push again on Thursday, because in the morning there's caucus, so it gets more complicated. But clearly the 19th, upwards, it would be a futile exercise at that point. Because even if certain things may need to be taken to the house, the house is closed until next year sometime, so you can't even take your decision to the house at that stage. Yes,
in addition to that, I think it would be an advantage to us if we request to sit, if we don't succeed on the 12th. Then that week, the very last week, then if we sit during the sitting,
yeah,
because even the opposition will be in the house.
Yeah.
It will be easy for us to call them to come to the meeting then, if bells ring, if there is voting, they will go back.
Yeah.
I truly don't agree with the sitting after the close, because I know from the experience of other committees, once the house has arisen, the opposition doesn't want to come and sit in the committee. Then we'll still struggle. Maybe if we can go the route that we have just put out here.
Colleagues, can we, in the interest of progress, leave it at that? I don't know where it puts you, but what it means is that definitely the 19th is out of the question. If you could be ready with something for us, say the latest Wednesday, the 17th, that's the best possible shot we can give it. Otherwise, we would have to look at towards the end of January, when committees have something called committee weeks, shortly before the opening of Parliament in the beginning of February. So it looks like those are just the realities. I don't want to risk this delegation concept thing, which I haven't seen it work in any committees before. I don't know if it's within the operational arrangements of the institution. But yeah, you want to?
Chair, let me first answer the question around what happens if more Stevens do not agree. I wanted to say to the members, I'm a praying man. So we are hoping we'll actually come up with a proposal. In fact, I think the best result is actually for us to get a firm that actually meets the requirements. That's really, because appointing more Stevens has got its own other challenges. Because actually the Act is quite clear that they can't be conflicted. So we actually have to go through quite a lot of things. So it's really, really a difficult one anyway. So the most important thing is possibly to get a firm that qualifies. In fact, I'm here I've not consulted with my colleagues, because I'm trying to also think on my feet, that in the event that we didn't have people that qualified, because we also what we did last year, I hope it's fine with you, John, maybe just to share my thoughts. What we did last year, before we sent out the adverts, we invited the firms to come to workshop at the office to create an interest, so that we could have many firms doing that. But in the event, maybe the decision that we must actually be asking for is also that in the event that we don't have people that qualify, we are given the opportunity to do it by way of a confinement where we can actually say we are going as an audit committee to go and invite some firms, and if they do meet the criteria, we are, because we actually have to get an auditor for the office. So, I mean, we cannot have external auditors. So in fact, I mean, it's not in Kimi, will that be will that be fine with you? As long as they are not conflicted, as long as the firms that we then end up approaching are not conflicted, because we know the firms that do some work for the Auditor General, we know the firms also that don't, that might actually meet the criteria, because we actually have to get that.
Maybe you can take some lessons from us politicians. When we go to election, we don't wait for election day and pray and hope that the dear Lord will deliver victory. What is the English word? A landslide victory to us. We go out and do what we call door to door. We touch every household to guarantee that they'll vote for our party. I'm just saying that maybe to advertise and hope that your institution is interesting and enterprising enough to attract the desired interest might be a little bit testing of faith, that maybe going proactively, as you suggested, out to entice interest and actually assess interest, so that you already know if there's keenness. I don't think there's any conflict that arises out of that. If there is somebody, should educate me. I think that gives you a better assurance that something will come up. But if you sit back and advertise and hope that sufficient interest will be generated, maybe that weekend the most interested firm, otherwise didn't read the newspaper, and that alone can jeopardize your entire strategy with all the resources that you've put out to achieve the objective. I'm just saying, do that which will maximize the prospect of us, you know, getting it right the first time around.
Like I said, I was thinking on my feet. What I'm thinking is that we first assess, once we've gotten the responses, because you also don't want people to say that the having put an advert, we were actually influencing the results. So we'll actually first wait until Wednesday, go through it. If within the firms that have applied, we actually get a candidate that actually meets the profile, then that's fine. All I'm saying is that if we get to that stage, we might actually, after Wednesday, it's only after Wednesday that we might actually want to do it, and we'll then try to do it very, very quickly. But we will ask the office so long to start giving us lists, so that when we meet on Wednesday, we know what we can do, what we can't do. So if that's fine, I think that would be a much better way, because then we can also move with speed. Then going on to the if chair, it can't be delegated to you. If the process sees the results, we can actually do something before the 18th. In fact, I was just looking at my own diary. I think possibly the Tuesday will suit John and I well. I can check with Professor Barak.
Tuesday the 16th, Wednesday the 17th?
Yes.
Tuesday.
Yes, I'm saying Tuesday works better. So we can actually try and do something for that week. But what we'll do, Chair, through the office, will give you an indication on Wednesday next week.
You know, as we are talking, I'm just remembering. But we could overcome that by getting somebody to, by me delegating the children to somebody in the committee. From Monday to Thursday next week, I am chairing interviews of the appointment committee in the Magistrates Commission, where we're filling about 24 courts throughout the country with the senior magistrate status. And on that committee, I'm the only person who's a full member of the commission. So I can't even delegate the chairing of the appointments committee to any of the other members of the committee because they're not members of the commission. So Monday to Thursday, my diary is blocked off. I'm supposed to fly in on Thursday night to come and chair school work on Friday next week. Oh, we're talking about a week after that. Oh, right. I was wondering, something is not gelling in my head. All right, okay. So that's what we'll do. Week after next Tuesday, will be scheduled during the sitting in the afternoon because most members during the day are in other committees, I suppose. Probably around 3-ish, we would then have this meeting. Is that the way forward? Or is there an indication that people would be available in the morning? That's the 16th, eh?
Yes, but we'll actually finalize those dates within next week once we know exactly what's happening. Because if we don't get a firm, it might actually be, there might be some work that still needs to be done. So
we'll
give you an indication.
I just remember the 17th, I, as Chair of the Review of Rules, I'm tabling a report on the amendments to the Rule Book of Parliament before the full National Assembly Rules Committee as well. So Wednesday is also that week, the 17th is also out during the morning for me. But all right, so either Tuesday morning or afternoon or Wednesday afternoon that week. Yes. Oh, sorry, I didn't see you.
Because I wanted to propose that let us do the issues of logistics.
All
then
right.
We communicate or like this with other than the
meeting.
Because I can also stand up and say I'm not available next week Friday, I'm not available. Let us just check among ourselves through your office and the week, then you lie to the office of the
meeting. Thank you. That takes us forward.
Yeah, in fact, Chair, depending on the results, we might actually maybe have something. It will be rough, but maybe we can be able to talk to it on Friday next week.
Mm-hmm.
We'll actually try and make sure that. Yeah.
All right.
Yes.
On that note, is there anybody else who still wants to say anything else on this subject before we move to the next one? Yes.
Chair, I'm not sure whether your committee has the possibility of approving resolutions by round robin as opposed to actually in meeting in person. Because if we don't get an appointment done by the end of November, it really is an incredibly serious problem for the Auditor General. Their audit process will in all likelihood break down and they will not meet their deadlines. And I think in terms of the reputation of the office, we need to do whatever we can to avoid that. So not knowing the rules of your standing committees, maybe your secretariat could research that, because you may, if you can't get quorum, a quorum at a meeting, that may be an alternative mechanism.
Now we'll deal with the issue as we go along, and we'll assess it as we move forward. The extreme position would be where Honorable Zavis' idea has to kick in, where people can even be called from their constituencies if important business of Parliament has to be disposed of. People can, in fact, with the assistance of the Chief Whip, be called on a special meeting. All right, so let's leave, as Honorable Zavis has advised, all the logistics to the future and deal with the issues at hand and move on with our program of the day.
Chairman, yeah. The members of the Audit Committee please be excused.
Yeah.
Thanks. I also wanted to say to the Honorable Members, we invited everybody from right across the country, not just Gauteng.
All right. Okay. On that note, thank you. All right. Now, the issue of the budget and strat plan, the researchers are supposed to table the document that was circulated. So let's start there, and then we'll see how we deal with them.
All right, the question?
Yes,
yes.
So earlier on you said you don't have a quorum.
Yes.
So if we continue with this document, and next week again you're going to deal again with this document, I don't know. I'll just need your assistance. But if you don't have a quorum,
it
doesn't matter on this document.
No, it does not matter, because it's not about making a decision. It's about us engaging more effectively with it in order to make a decision. Next week, we will not rehearse the exercise. What we will be having next week is a draft report of the committee on the strat plan and the audit and the annual report for consideration and adoption. So the idea is to prepare ourselves towards that final stage. So it is still relevant for us to, in fact, this is the next step in the process towards making a decision. All right. Researcher, please proceed.
The analysis here is about the strat plan of the Auditor General for 2011 and 2012 financial year. The first item there is the introduction towards the. It introduces the duties of the Auditor General related to the SCOWC, Standing Committee on Auditor General. It reads as follows on the document. The Public Audit Act, PAA number 25 of 24 of 2004, section 38, subsection 1, requires that the affairs of the Auditor General be conducted in accordance with the business plan and budget prepared by the AG for each financial year, which must include the estimate of revenue, expenditure, projected revenue, and expenditure for the financial year. Following the year to which the budget and the business plan relate, and the basis on which audit fees for the year to which the budget relates. Section 38, it's the second paragraph. Section 38, subsection 3 of the PAA requires that the AG must at least in 6 months before the start of the financial year submit the budget and the business plan to the oversight mechanism, which means COWORK. To the oversight mechanism, the National Treasury, for planning and preparing the national annual budget. And then paragraph 3, section 38, subsection 3 of the PAA further requires that the oversight mechanism consider the budget and business plan within 2 months of receipt, submit the recommendation to the Speaker for tabling in the National Assembly and the National Treasury. The Auditor General of South Africa, ABSA, describes its mission for 2011-12 financial year as a reputation promise to the people of South Africa, which says the Auditor General has constitutional mandate and as a supreme audit institution of South Africa, it exists to strengthen our constitution, democracy, our constitutional democracy, by enabling oversight, accountability, and governance in public sector through auditing, thereby building public confidence. This paper aims to highlight the performance targets set for the achievement of the 5 commitments by ABSA, and to analyze its budget for consideration by the Standing Committee on Auditor General as an oversight mechanism for the AG.
Can I suggest that you try and summarize? Don't give us too much background. Just go to the key salient issues that you have picked up that can be the subject of engagement, and then we move from there.
The document here, it has 2 sections that are summarized in terms of analyzing the budget and the performance target. The first section here is the performance target that is set by the Auditor General for 2011-2012. It's in page 2, starts from page 2 at the bottom. It's just a heading that says performance target. The immediate target of ABSA is to eliminate all worst-case audit opinions, the disclaimers and adverse opinions. And then there's point 3.1 below that. It says clean audit opinion. The target is set at 80% for clean audit opinions of PFMA organizations in 2011-2012. The PFMA organization would be departments and the public entities, excluding municipalities. The target for 2010-11 is increased from 60%. It was 60% for the current year, but for the 2011-2012 is increased by 20% to 80% for that financial year that the Auditor General wants to achieve in terms of or clean audit opinion on a PFMA organization. The target is set at 60% for clean audit opinion of PFMA, of MFMA, sorry, which means that one includes the municipalities and its entities. It is set at 60% for clean audit opinion in 2011-2012 financial year. Target for 2010-2011, which means the current year, is increased by 30% to 60% for 2011-2012 financial year. In the case of targets of MFMA audits, then ABSA's target has been aligned with those of the department, which means the COCTA, the Cooperative Governance Traditional Affairs Department. So the target there has been aligned with the COCTA's initiative. So 3.2.
Let's deal with the issues one at a time. The first issue essentially that the researcher is putting on the table is relating to the elevation of the target for clean audit. You'd recall that previously we had a lengthy debate about whether it is within the power or the responsibility of the Auditor General to achieve clean audits, or it is entirely in the hands of the auditees to do so, and whether we can realistically set a target from this side of the fence when we don't know and we cannot preempt the conduct of entities, of auditees. Maybe the Auditor General can address us on this issue, taking us on board at the same time with the latest achievements, the latest audit outcomes at both PFMA and FMA, and how we have fared in terms of our projections there previously to develop the confidence that going forward we can achieve this kind of, shall I call it, ambition sort of target. Yes.
Thank you, Chair. Just at the outset, maybe just for our clarity, I obviously received, among others, this document yesterday, and unfortunately have not had a chance to check where all of these percentages of clean audits that we are targeting to achieve is coming from. Can this help us understand, get it from the document, which is part of the document?
Yeah, can you make sure that whenever we refer to issues in the set plan, we also refer to pages or sections of the strat plan? Yes.
Before he continues, maybe he will clarify for me. I'm not clear. For the clean audit of PFMA, it's not the same like MSA.
Yeah.
It's not the same.
Yeah, it's because municipalities are much harder to get to clean audit, and they are, in terms of numbers, they are the larger numbers, so the problem grows bigger. Whereas the other spheres of government probably narrow. Yeah, it's just my speculation. But there are two different dispensations basically. Yes.
Sorry, Chair, Dr. Lady, if you can help. The targets that is set in our strat plan for the 2011 onwards, I haven't got any of the stuff. We don't have any of the stuff in our targets that is in this document. Our document, if you look at our document, if I may just recap from where we were when we were presenting the strat plan, we've got five areas that we are chasing as an office to say that one of the things in our goals, the first goal is the goal that says, as an office, what we are in control of is the ability to write our audit outcomes and our audit opinions in a manner that simplifies the message, that makes the message relevant and accurate for the person who's going to use it. And so our performance measure in respect of that goal is our ability to assess the quality of the message that has been produced by our people in our reports as an enabler for those that are running departments to understand what we are saying to them. so that it can facilitate them driving clean administration in their environment. And once there is clean administration, it goes almost without saying that the audit opinion will follow suit. That's conceptually what we present in our documents. We do not have a target that says we will strive to achieve 80% of clean audits, because that's not our space. So I think we must clarify that, because then we are talking past each other in terms of the conceptual starting point of our role and our office. And clearly this chair, with respect, I think it's probably not properly and appropriately positioned. Maybe there was some miscommunication in how perhaps this was put together in the research phase. But clearly, and I can go on with others. And we, if you look at the targets that we set, we say that we are going to use a scale of 1 to 4 when we measure in the organization the achievement or otherwise of the objective of simplicity. Where a senior manager or an executive in the organization, if they get a measure that says 1, it means they did not achieve the minimum standards that we set insofar as simplicity is concerned, meaning that that which they wrote will not contribute to enabling departments and entities to
improve
from a clean administration point of view. Then we will have a measure of 2, which is partially achieved. That will be somebody who has dealt with some of the issues but could not grasp some other issues that they were meant to deal with. And then here in our targets, if you look at the strat plan document, it says we are putting a target of 3 overall, where 3 means those people who we are targeting to get and achieve, where people have achieved all the targets and the minimum standards that we have set. And then if you go to a scale of 4, it means those are the people who have exceeded our minimum expectations. So those are the things that we are measuring, which we believe are in our control. But the ultimate outcome of clean audits will be driven by how we step up the game in the office from a performance point of view on all of these goals. The simplicity, the one on the visibility of our leadership and all that.
Yeah.
So I think let's clarify up front that we are not setting a target for clean audits, because clean audits, the decision for whether an audit is a clean audit or not is in our hands, in the sense that we are the ones who sign the audit opinion. So we can't really put that as our target, otherwise we'll be seriously... I mean, we're going back to the debate we had last year.
Yeah, you'll be compromising your own constitutional mandate. Yeah, Honourable Seven.
Thank you, Chair. I think now I'm tempted to say what I wanted to say earlier.
All right.
When I said, are you going to deal with this document today? Maybe I was not part of the meeting, because I didn't want us to engage in front of the AG. I thought you would do this. That's why I specifically wanted to say, let us deal with this document later.
Mm-hmm.
Because firstly, what is the purpose of the document?
Mm-hmm.
When I received this document, I thought, is for us as members of the COEC to try and simplify the AG's report and the AG's annual report and strategic plan so we can deal with it later. I never thought the research would be put in this case like your report, blah, 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 blah. Because clearly some of the things, if you go to the annual report, some of the things during that meeting, I think it's last week or last week, that other side, some of the issues were explained in that meeting. So I don't know the main purpose of this document. That's what I was asking. Because what I remember in that meeting,
Maybe let's put aside.
I finish, please, Chair, through you? Because I thought in this meeting, if I remember, during that meeting, the DAG had the second presentation he presented. We didn't finish interrogating that report. That was the part that was Mr. was supposed to do today, to consider the interrogation. So I thought maybe, that's what I'm saying, you will assist me, I know. I thought this will assist us to do that. But what we are doing now, to be honest, I'm confused. I don't know what we are doing.
All I wanted to ask you is whether you have a proposal as to how best we engage with that report. The idea was for the researcher to lift out areas of discussion and engagement for the committee. It's a pity that this document was only circulated, when was it? It was Wednesday. What I had requested should happen, which didn't happen, is that immediately after our last interaction, and we've had 2 weeks now, the research team was supposed to have finished their draft research document before I even look at it, directly to the Auditor General's office, where they identify the key areas of engagement so that there is clarification as to the accuracy, so that we don't have the situation. And I have been pestering since last week to have the document released. I don't want to go into all the detail, but the long and short of it is that the research unit shot itself in the foot by only producing this thing 2 days ago, because then they did not have the benefit of being guided by the Auditor General's office on and being provided with proper context as the DAG has just done now. So in a sense, that's where we are now, and that's why we're having this problem. Otherwise, it would have been a very positive way of lifting out specific issues around which we can engage, and that will then be the basis on which we're going to report to the House. Because otherwise, what do we report on? But it's clear that this process is not going to be as successful as we had hoped, given the fact that all of us have only just received it day before yesterday. The only person that has had reasonable time really to engage with us is the research unit itself. So unfortunately, that's the situation we are in. The difficulty, of course, is that documents apparently are supposed to go to the seniors, who must be given time to look at them and approve them before they come back to us and so on. By that time, it's too late for us to use the document or to even correct it before we can use it. How do we proceed? Yes, research. Let me first hear the research and then I'll come back.
Before the research, because you asked me a question, I wanted to respond to that, the approach.
Right.
But I don't think there's anything wrong maybe with the document maybe being submitted. Like I said, I thought it will come to us and as a committee, not in the presence of the AG.
Mm.
We see the document for the first time, we engage, they engage. But there's a committee, we receive a document from the researcher, we put flesh on it, or we subtract flesh on it, then it can go to the AG.
Mm.
That's what I thought it will happen. That's the process that I'll propose. That we can deal with this document on our own. So that if there's something we want to add or want to subtract, because fortunately we had an opportunity of receiving presentation from the AG's office. So I thought we'll engage on our own first before we engage them. But then when we say, researcher, can you do 1, 2, 3, 4, these are the key issues. One just further clarification or whatever, from the AG's office. Thank you, Chair.
Look, I don't know, but we have only next week, Friday, to adopt a report of the committee, which should contain key issues that we want to highlight for the House to consider, plus draft resolutions of the House. And those draft resolutions necessarily must include all aspects that in terms of the Act requires approval, so that our recommendations in respect of those issues are very clear and the House can approve. But I stand to be guided by the meeting. The idea was that this week will sort out all these issues, seek clarity, confirm what those issues are, so they are properly captured in the draft report, which next week we would then put before the committee for adoption. So next week the idea would be that we have a report that is as accurate as possible to adopt, not to still have further engagement. Otherwise, we must just agree that we're not going to be able to adopt any of these things before we rise, and that we are looking at a program that takes us into January. If come next week, we will not be in a state that we can adopt a report. Can I be guided as to how we proceed in the light of this reality? Honorable Sir, you want to? All right.
Well, thank you. Chairperson, next week, you have been thinking that it won't take long to be a matter of filing, but the opposition that we notice, it might take us back, and we won't maybe finalize anything. What I've been thinking is that let's wait for the quorum, because it's just a matter, it's nothing that we are going to take any decision. It's just a matter of listening, asking questions, clarity. Then next week we'll be repeating the same exercise when there is quorum. Then the best thing maybe is to wait for next week and do everything next week. And there is something that the researcher wanted to raise. Then further came people before him. Maybe let's hear from him what he wants to say.
Yeah.
Yes, Honorable Members. I received two documents from the AG. The first document that we received, it was the original document, the blue book, that is a medium-term plan of the AG office. This item of the clean audit opinion, if you look at it originally, they have about five commitments that they in their strike plan. It starts with simple clarity and message of simplicity. But this one was reflected in that original blue book. There's a table there that shows the targets that they set in terms of clean audit opinion. Then I took it from there. Then later, after I had analyzed the document, the whole blue book for the strike plan, then I received another information from the AG. It came from Mr. Johnny Ramrock. The same information, when I compare it with the previous threat plan, it's completely different. Even the targets were different. Then I had to compare and try to adjust, use the latest one. But in the later document, this item of clean audit was not there. Then I said, no, let me leave it there because it's reflected in the original blue book. Let me put it as an additional commitment to the AG. But originally it was not there. Even in their threat plan, that one was not reflected.
Let's not be bogged down with logistics and detail. I think that the DAG's point was a very simple one, which makes sense. It relates to the question of contextualization. To say that the mandate of the office is to make the audit process helpful to the auditee such that it makes it possible for them to maximize their performance, if you like. They need to understand what is expected of them so that in their pursuit of doing things correctly, they know what it is that they're expected to do and what it is that they're going to be judged on, so that those things enable them to achieve the objective of clean audit. That's the simple context. How we put it is a matter of formulation, and that can be dealt with quite easily. All right. It seems to me, yes.
I don't know if I'll be preempting which way the committee will be going, but from our side, as an office, we are almost operating in injury time.
Yes.
We are in injury time already, right? Because the practical implication of the event that is coming up now, together with many other obligations that we have, is such that a lot of people have now been assigned full responsibilities as of immediately to focus on the preparations that we are dealing with on the upcoming conference. And therefore, there are other commitments which also have some global physical activity that we need to be attending to and talking to it before the happening of the conference. So if I was listening to your debate earlier regarding your timing, possible that physically in this form, this is probably the last that we will physically be available in terms of coming to SCOWEC on the subject of the strike plan. I understand the earlier discussion regarding the audit committee because the different layers, there may well be one or two coming from us, accompanying them, or whatever, but in terms of us giving attention for another session with the committee as the office to engage on the strike plan, will be extremely difficult, at least for the remaining period in this calendar year. Because immediately after this conference that we are hosting, there are other United Nations obligations that we will be attending to immediately as part of our annual calendar, by which time, obviously, we will be gone on the Christmas. And by the time we come back from those obligations, which will be the December holiday. Already, I mean, to next year, as I'm speaking, without an opportunity for a meeting. So I think we've got that dilemma now that it's possible if nothing happens today in respect of this program as a facilitator. Practically, it may only happen in the year that we have in place. That's just the caution I wanted to put on the table so that whatever we decide, we've got that understanding in terms of our.
Yeah.
Because our time has become almost inflexible now in this period.
Yeah. Look, the intention really was to conclude the business of the committee next week, Friday, because the other week is just only for purposes of dealing with a matter that could not be dealt with any other way other than that week, and therefore it will just be a meeting specifically to deal with that specific problem. We can't postpone anything else except that. Can I plead for progress and say that we are where we are and we'll have to make the best of the situation? And also in relation to opposition not being here, by their absence they're missing the opportunity to really participate in certain processes. But it does not necessarily mean that the process cannot go ahead and that when they're here we have to restart the process. If we have a draft report that is ready for consideration by the committee next week, all right, at that stage, anybody who wants to add or subtract would be in relation to the draft report, not to a general discussion of the strat plan. A draft report that goes out in the name of this committee on the work that would have done on the annual report of strat plan. That's what would be the focus. And any input from the Auditor General's office, whether by the Auditor General himself or officials delegated to that effect, would just be to confirm that the content of the report is an accurate reflection of what is meant, so that we avoid situations such as the one we've just dealt with now. That would be the purpose of next week, Friday. So that's why I'm saying the actual work needs to be finished today. That's just the reality of the situation. So I'd suggest that I was going to suggest that the researcher has identified areas for engagement, all we need is to clarify and contextualize issues, set correction, not necessarily word for word, but understand the concept, and then how it's captured later on paper is something that can be done administratively as we finalize a draft report for next week. I'll just have to be more hands-on in terms of facilitating, ensuring that we have a proper report come next week. Adil has been very frustrated, I know. So I know your concerns as well, but it's fine. We'll deal with these things. Let's try and make progress. Yes, Agent.
Thank you, Chair, for that guidance. I just needed to also, in that vein, highlight what would be important to be reflected in the COVID report.
Yes.
And I'm more biased towards those issues that COVID needs specific approval to make, which without which we cannot move as an office.
Yeah.
And in the context of the threat plan, is two issues. It's the approval of the tariff, because without that approval, we cannot adjust or adopt the audit fees for the next audit cycle.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we'll be conducting an irregular practice.
Yes.
The second one is the approval of the audit directive, which is meant to be the basis by which all auditors of public sector entities need to follow as part of the scope of auditing and the standards by which they need to audit. At least we've got a lesser risk on the audit directive, because they haven't changed much, but the tariffs may be a tricky aspect which will require guidance and a specific consent from Parliament before we can update our tariff schedule. So those are the two issues that I think will be important, at least if we are to be able to operate from April 2011. What I was going to suggest, if perhaps it's not possible to do it before Parliament rises, maybe it could be the first thing on return of the Parliament to reschedule another session where we can consider at least these two digital matters. Thank you, Chair.
All right. Let's see how far we can go with doing all that is necessary to possibly have a draft report that can be considered come next week. And if next week's meeting is of the view that OAC is not ready to approve such a report, we can then kick in the Plan B option that the AG has proposed, and that is of having that report adopted in January. Bearing in mind that sometimes you commit yourself to completing something on a day, and the reality is that what you have before you is such that you cannot realistically go ahead with it. I would make that suggestion, which then leaves us with the question, for purposes of today, do we proceed with this process, or do we seek to rather defer to a situation where a draft report can be prepared in consultation with the AG's office, and that come next week we have a draft report to consider and discuss? Is there areas that we did not cover in the presentation of last week, maybe let me start there, that we may need to zoom in now, so that we satisfy ourselves that the process from the side of the AG's office in terms of presentation has actually been completed. DAG?
From last week's presentation, Chair, the presentation of 2 weeks ago, if I recall, we went as far as articulating where we were headed in respect of our 5 goals. And from there on, one of the things that we were also going to look at was to once again reflect on what is contained in the audit directive. As AG has indicated, the audit directive that we have submitted to the council for consideration has got no substantial changes to it. The question of reconfirming the bulk of the issues that we highlighted in our audit directive. And in that context, Chair, and in the same breath as the way we dealt with the 5 areas of commitment as we presented them last time, we can take any questions arising in respect of those 5 goals that we presented, in respect of the financial targets that we put to our income statement as part of the presentation the last time, and any questions that may arise in respect of matters that members of the committee might want to clarify in respect of the audit directive as well. So effectively, I think the unfinished business was almost the engagement that would have arisen from what we presented the last time. And hence I say that we are ready to hear whatever questions or matters the committee wants to raise, and then we can take it from there.
It was on the basis of that understanding that we actually requested this research document to facilitate by identifying areas around which, as members, we could zoom into in that engagement. So I would say let's use a discretion on the part of members. Let members freely raise issues that they feel in their view need clarity or needs to be highlighted, and let's capture that. Whether you use the researcher's document, I'm simply going to say use the research document as a resource for yourself, but otherwise just openly engage and raise any specific issues that you wish to raise, and we'll work on that basis. Anybody who wants to kick off? Yes, Honorable Zere.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think now I'm clear. Well, that was my understanding to come to this meeting, was to continue on what happened last time, the engagement. But unfortunately, I don't have anything to put in. What I wanted to propose, not that I'm stopping other members to continue, if there's any other thing to say. I just wanted to go to the issue of the report. I just wanted to say, if the draft report can be made readily available before Friday, so that come Friday we have engaged, where we have seen the report, not that we see the report for the first time, so that the standing council is on our side, so that we can be able to just adopt. So if there's anything that needs to be corrected, maybe an error or anything, before Friday it can be done, during the process, if we receive the report in time, that's all I wanted to say. So that we don't approve a report in pieces. The other one for January, because now my view is that if the draft report will be ready by Friday, we'll approve everything by Friday. The only role that we must play on our side is to make sure that we have a quorum in that meeting. Because I'm not sure, I just want to check with you. You know, I'm a new member, so I don't understand some of these things. But if you talk about the quorum, if the quorum says 8 members, if it's 8 members from the ANC, the opposition is not there, is it not the quorum?
Well, it is
the quorum. So what we need to do is to go to that meeting by Friday and approve everything with whoever is there. That is our role as the chair, as the committee members, or as the chair. You must make sure that maybe your office will cut to make sure that we have the quorum. Because I mean, the issue that says we have to approve everything, not piece by piece. Especially, to be honest, it won't be fair on the side of the AG. They have played their role.
what remains from our side. Yeah. They've been engaging the report. So I thought that is something that they have not yet engaged on. Chair.
It's 10 to 11 now. And according to my clock, we can still go for another hour of engagement with the threat plan in similar vein as we did with the annual report. We have this document which might have its own flaws that seeks to highlight certain issues. We may want to lift out certain areas assisted by the document or of our own accord so that we elevate those as issues that would form part of the content of what would come out of the report. Yeah. Yes, yes.
Maybe I can assist here and also as a way of coming to the rescue almost of the researcher. I think the one area in this document that we probably ought to ignore is 3.1. Otherwise, the rest of the document is indeed picked up from the main plan that we submitted, except for item 3.1 on this document.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I think as kind of a feedback as well on it is to say, any strat plan that was presented in years prior to the current year, that strat plan is completely superseded.
Yeah.
Because we're dealing with a rolling period here of 3 years. So I think as a lesson is to say, any other document that relates to years prior to the current year is superseded, so there will be no reference made to any document that we would have presented previously. And I think that's why this 3.1 has thrown a spanner in the works. It shouldn't have been looked at. We should have looked at the one that, because by starting from zero base in preparing the strat plan, we are saying all thoughts that we may have had in the past are superseded. We are dealing with what we are presenting now. So I think as a lesson, as a way forward to also help the research unit in the future, must also make sure that the only one from document that is used. So that this 3.1, if we ignore it, then the rest of the issues that are in this document are relevant for the discussion.
Yeah. All right. That's actually how I understand it as well. The matter is as simple as this. You adopt a strat plan. At the end of the reporting period, you produce a report, and the report basically closes issues relating to what you had planned for and how far you had gone in achieving what you had planned for that particular period. So the third plan is completed, full cycle, at the point when you produce your report, and then you move on to the next sort of era, if you like. So I think that's the essence of what you're conveying, which is correct. So that is the manner in which we'll approach the issues. We're looking at the current strat plan going forward, not the previous strat plan going backward. And of course, any issues that related to the previous strat plan would have been dealt with in the context of the annual report that we were considering. Right, so going forward then, and having gone past 3.1, can we quickly go through the rest of the main issues highlighted? I don't want a narration of the issue. I just want a lifting of an issue. And then everybody can read for themselves, and then we look at how we understand the issue. Can you proceed to the next issue that you have highlighted in your report?
Thank you, Chair. First, I must say the analysis of the strike plan was done given by the mandate of the committee. there are two ways that need to be considered in the stress, in the mandate of the Committee of SCOE. That says protect and assist the aging. When you look at it, it's not exactly the same as other committees, like portfolio committees, COFA, as other committees do in order to hold
all
them accountable.
Just oversight, yeah.
Yes. In this, in the mandate of the SCOE, it says you protect the AG and you assist.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not just here to interrogate it and try to catch AG somewhere.
No,
you
we know all of, we
so
know all of that and we accept that.
For that reason, we had only two questions that we highlighted here, because in most of the items we were trying to motivate and support, even in the budget, we were trying to support and motivate more on the figures that they put there, because the budget is driven by the commitments that the cost is driven by the commitments,
yeah, sure,
that the aging. For that reason, we have two questions that we highlighted. If you look at the budget interpretation, it's on the budget itself, not on the target. It's page 8 of the budget interpretation. Page 8, there's one question there. But you start at the bottom. Oh, it's the same document with that one, but that one has got a small font, then we increase it, then the page is changed, the page numbering changed. So maybe
can you just tell us what
this is, another
what
one.
Paragraph it is?
Okay.
As long as you mention
not
the paragraph.
They receive the document like a faint font, then I increase it this morning.
All right.
So that they can,
yeah,
then it changes.
Look, I also can't follow the pages because of my own font. So if you told me 3.3 or 4.1 or something,
okay,
then I can follow.
It's go to the budget interpretation first, the heading on budget interpretation.
And the number is 3?
It's 4.1, 4.4. 4.1, 4.4. It says comparison to available cash reserves. No.
It's 4.1.4. That's what you mean.
Yes, 4.2 now. Below that. That's 4.1. There's 4.2 that says detailed budget interpretation. Yeah.
All right.
And below that there are bullet points. Then if you go to the bottom of the page 6, then it continues to page 7. Then the bottom, the last paragraph on page 7. The bullet point there is the last paragraph on page 7. Yes, it starts with bank charges. Yes. It says bank charges are provided for 505,000. Includes bank charges at the amount of 503,600,000. And the foreign bank charges, which amounts to 2,000 rand. Then it continues to the second bullet point there. I started reading two bullet points so that you can have an understanding when we ask the question there. It says finance charges amounts to 8.298 million. Usually finance charges are provided for the cost of borrowing. And then interest, which means interest charge on loan balance. The variance between 2010 and 2011 of the finance charges amounts to 5.9 million, to round it off. So the question would be, would ASCA borrow money in 2011-2010 financial year. Please indicate, provided that you are indicating that you will have finance charges. So we just need clarity from the agent if they will be borrowing money in that financial year, because they provided for finance charges that you pay for.
So it's just a matter of contextualizing the budgeting for that item.
All right. Have you all got a copy of the full document, the flat plan?
Yeah.
The full document. I just want to go to the page quickly because I'm challenged. I think it's page 46. If you could find page 46 in this document, although it's not numbered, but I can see the numbering on the index, but I'm not seeing the numbering on the main document, but it's headed projected balance sheet. You don't have that one.
The main
let me just explain it, even if I have not referred to the document. The interest, the finance charges that we have been paying all along is for not borrowing in the form of going to ask for money from another institution. The way we buy the laptops that we give to our staff, we buy them via what is a purchase agreement with the bank. For the bank, we'll place an order for the laptops, let's say 700 laptops, because we have new intake every year, there's new people that come into the organization and all of that. So we buy them in large quantities, and we don't pay cash up front for them. We get a bank, for example, in this case, we use Standard Bank to finance those laptops when we buy them. So because they are making money available for us to buy those laptops, we pay interest on it. And it's a better way of financing them, because at least we know that at any time we need a bulk supply of laptops, the bank will finance it. So the bulk of these are finance charges that are in respect of the normal operational activity of buying laptops, if you like, on credit. So it attracts interest, basically, by actually entering into that arrangement. And if you look at our balance sheet, to get more happiness as to where this finance charge is coming from, as I was saying, if you had a copy of the projected balance sheet, in the liabilities, which is the amount that we owe to somebody now, and you can also look at the amounts that you are projecting to owe in the future. They are all in respect of those installments in accident, predominantly. So those are the ones that are trapped finance charges. So there's no situation where we will go to FNB or RMB or Investec or any bank and say to them, we would like to borrow money because we've run out of cash. That's not the finance charge for that kind of purpose. So the answer, therefore, to your question is, no, we will not be borrowing money. But the answer is, yes, we will continue to use the installment sale agreement when we acquire the laptops, hence the finance charge.
All right. Okay. That was just a matter for clarity more than anything. Okay. Anybody else who wishes to say anything on this one before we move to the next issue? All right.
Okay.
Yes?
I don't understand. They've got this system of asking the bank to buy in bulk, and they at the end they have to pay with interest. Are you saying that? Why don't you take your money and buy cash, saving that interest, that amount of money that is interest?
Let's say we did that. Okay, let's use the way that we are using it now. The money that we would have used to pay cash, we didn't use it, but we still have it. While it is in our hands, we are earning interest on it. So the net difference between the interest that we are earning while we are having that money in our hands and the finance charges that we are paying for using somebody else's money, that is offset by the interest that we have. Because if we took that money out of our bank account and paid immediately, we wouldn't have earned interest, and we also wouldn't have paid interest. So the answer to the question is, we've got to look at the interest income that we earn by still having the money. Yes. So it's not fully lost. It's just the way that we handle it. And it makes it easy for us. In fact, we have a tender process where we find a supplier for the laptops. So the supplier will go and source the laptops for us, and then we have an arrangement with the bank for the bank to pay the supplier on our behalf. Otherwise, we could have used our money, but we wouldn't have earned interest because we no longer would have had the money in our bank. So it's kind of playing with the economics of finances. But I think the risk is low for us because it's more about making sure that we don't struggle with having to get suppliers paid.
I would have thought that the issue of how much you earn in the form of interest or you lose in the form of interest in that context wouldn't have been such a big issue. The bigger issue would have been the clarity would have been more as to what prompts you to prefer that model of acquisition of this type of asset as opposed to the other model where you simply go out, source it, and pay directly in cash. So the rationale around that, if you're saying all it is, it's about earning more by keeping your money and using somebody else's money in the form of the interest differential that you get, and that is the rationale behind you using that method. If that is the answer, I think it's one thing. But if you're saying that we're using this model because it's more convenient, it's more, it's easier to handle suppliers if you do it through a bank or whatever, that could be another consideration.
Maybe just to add more clarity to this, Chair. In essence, without going to the complications of the financing model, in essence, what it means is it allows our money as an office to travel longer. I think that's the essence.
So it improves your cash flow.
Absolutely. Yeah.
All right.
It allows us to have our money longer for other needs as well. It's like if I want to buy a car, even if I've got the 100,000 car that the car costs, the choice I need to make is whether I'm prepared to pay 3,000 rand a month for 4 years, or do I want to part with my 100,000, all of it now? Because
especially given the risk in your business where your auditing sometimes
if they ever pay you. So you are taking advantage of the cash flow. That's exactly
right.
What it is.
Okay. Now I think that is essentially the context, and I think that's how we should understand it. All right. Let's move to another area.
Yes. Another question is in page 9. It's just the next page.
With me, you must tell me which bullet or which point, because the pages are not the same.
The bullet point is the second bullet point on this document. It starts with other expenses.
Under what item?
It's the same item. 4.2.
All right.
It says other expenses, starts with the word other expenses.
Yes, I see that.
Yes, the other expenses amounts to 4.2 million, includes bad debt provision. Would the provision for bad debt mean writing off some of the debtors? Please explain. We just need explanation because there's a provision for bad debt.
All right.
Right. this one, if when we look at our experience of our auditees, and we know that we are going to charge them for the whole year's audit, I'm just using an example, Chair, to illustrate the principle here before I get to answer the question. If the people that we audit in total owe us 100 million rand, and based on experience, we know that municipalities and other auditees, based on history now, okay, do not normally pay us as required. We know that of that 100 million that is owing by our auditees, we are likely
to only get
80. And that's really what we are doing here. We are just saying,
just being realistic.
Yeah, we are just saying, because we are auditors, we are prudent about what we do, we are realistic about the fact that there will be those that default. We don't want to give an impression in our books that we are going to get 100 million in our bank. We know that we are going to get 80 million. But that does not mean that we are not going to chase those ones who make up the 20.
Yeah.
That's an essence of the story. So we will continue to chase the ones that make up the difference between 100 and 80, which means it's the 20. It doesn't mean it's a written off. It means that we just being realistic that we don't want to make our figures look good when we know that in reality we are going to get less.
In this instance, it's 4.2 million, which is a negligible amount.
The current arrangement, Chair, is being added to a bigger amount of about 30. I mean, the issue of the
The issue of the provision for bad debt is an accumulation over a period of time.
Yeah.
So this 4.2 is the current period charge to the income statement.
Yeah.
But the total quantum of amount that we are building up is something like 30 or 35, I think it is. In total. So effectively, what you are seeing as the 4.2 million is the actual charge for the current period. But on the balance sheet, you've got a bigger amount accumulated.
Now, even so, I'm conscious of that, but even so, I still find, I don't know why a poor man like me should find 4 million a small amount. But it sounds like it's not a huge, it's not a crisis. I'm saying this because the impression that we've always had is that the situation of bad debt as a result of auditees not paying up the debt is of proportions that should raise concern. If you tell me 4 million per annum, it sounds like a negligible amount to me out of a budget the size of your budget. I'm just making that observation. I would have been more stressed if we're talking 40 million for 1 year. But if it's an accumulated total budget, then I don't think it's particularly worrying, at least to me. But of course, as it accumulates, maybe that's really the point, that these bad debts, because they don't get off the book as such in terms of the history, when you look at it in total, it becomes a significant amount in that context. But yeah, it's just a comment really.
Oh, okay. Satisfied with the answer.
All right.
Let's do that.
Sorry?
You
have to answer. Yeah, no, I'm fine.
Yes, we had only those two questions.
All right. Maybe I could just clarify on this one. Is this a reflection of your vigorous pursuit of outstanding debts that you are able to keep your bad debt record, in my view, this low, unless you suggest that actually it's very high relative to other institutions?
Because maybe there's a point that can be made in relation to what extent have you succeeded as an achievement to despite difficulties in securing payments to at least maintain bad debts at a fairly low level.
Our understanding of our bad debt book, Chair, is driven by starting with the analysis of the different types of auditees that we deal with. When it comes to national departments, we seldom have any problems. It's either a blip in one national department, but it gets sorted out quickly. So that is the bulk of the generation of our income, effectively. Also, if you look at the public entities are not at risk when it comes to collecting and all that. Then you take it to the next level of provinces. Provinces as well, we're fairly comfortable that in most provinces and in most of those 10, 12 provincial departments that we audit, we are more than likely going to succeed in collecting our fees. Then the crunch comes with municipalities. And even with municipalities, it's not all municipalities. It's normally concentrated, as we said before, in provinces like your Northern Cape, your Northwest, and to some extent also the likes of the Eastern Cape. So if you look at it in terms of the total fee that we collect, I mean, you're saying that the bulk of the institutions that we audit do not have this problem, but this problem has kind of defined itself around municipalities predominantly in those isolated provinces, at least for what we know up to now. We've also seen, I think in the last year, once we have decided what our provision for bad debt is going to be, and we make efforts to try different ways through which we can get the audit fees, we've had success, for example, in one instance, in two instances I know, like in the Free State and in the Eastern Cape, where the province was able to make plans to stand in some way for some of the municipalities that were not able to pay. So what it means is that even if we had a 30 million provision where we thought this is the extent to which we are going to lose money that we have already built for, subsequently, we've seen situations where we actually have a surprise payment, if you like. You know. So technically, what it means is that if you wanted to, let's take an example with the Eastern Cape. Eastern Cape came in, I think it was last year, and gave us an amount of about 11 million as support for municipalities that were not able to pay. So by actually getting that 11 million, which was already factored in arriving at the provision of 30 million rand, it almost tells you that depending on how effective you are in persuading, that 30 million might argue that in the context of the payment you're receiving of 11 may be overstated. But we leave it like that because we are assessed every year together with the auditors. So I think the auditors, when they look at it, they look at our policy, which drives how much we are providing for bad debts. And every year, we assess it on an annual basis. So when we see that this amount is sitting at 30 or 40, it's likely because there's an analysis that was done to assess the potential for failure to pay. Mm-hmm. So I would say, in short, it's a combination of using our experience, but at the same time, assessing specific cases that we are aware of.
I think for me what it says is that on the balance we have managed to use a combination of methods or interventions that has had the net effect of keeping an otherwise potentially volatile bad debt situation well within control. And to me, it's an important point around sustainability going forward that needs to be captured, because I think it's an important outcome that needs to be reflected. We have constantly been worried about the problem of the risk, the bad debt risk situation, and what it could do to the institutions' financial sustainability going forward, and any achievements in terms of keeping bed debts, whether through the support of provincial intervention or municipalities being more committed to within their challenges to nevertheless live up to their obligations. It shows a positive kind of mindset to ensuring that you don't, in addition to having disclaimers on top of that, being able to pay for your audit fees. So I think we should note that in a positive light. Yes,
Chair, I think you're on the right track on this one. And I would like to also say, in addition to that, perhaps, what needs to be underlined is that the real achievement that we are still striving for, as far as our debts are concerned, is to convert them into cash in the bank. Because I think what we are achieving now is the ability to reflect transparently the situation in the books. But the ultimate, which I think is also a critical thing that will capture it properly, is to strive to convert that which is sitting in our debtors into cash in the bank. I think that's really where the real progress and achievement will be measured.
Where they commit but don't actually pay.
Absolutely. So whatever we do in getting our provision to be accurate is a book entry.
Yeah.
Ultimately, that book entry is not going to pay our electricity.
Yeah.
It's not going to pay our laptops. It's not going to pay our audit team and our auditors, as well as the firms that help us.
So this bad debt projection of 4 million, is it based on the actual cash situation that you project? That's a different thing.
A different story. Okay.
Yeah.
This is an accounting entry that says, better be prudent. Don't show that you are going to collect. Because if you've got in your balance sheet 100 million, like I illustrated, the best thing to do is to show the 100 million and the reality that 20 of it is not going to hit your bank account. All that's going to hit your bank account is 80. So what I'm saying is that we've created sufficient transparency for the person who reads our financial statement to know that we are at risk of not receiving the other 20.
Yeah.
That's what that provision is about. We are just telling the user of the financial statement that you better know that we are owed 100, but we are realistic in the sense that we know we're only going to get 80. All I'm saying is that the effort to collect the balance of 20 is the real success, because that 20, if it doesn't hit the bank account, our ability to pay salaries, to pay for electricity, to pay for all the things that we need to access the federal mandate will be compromised.
Sure.
So I think that's the ultimate that I think we need to capture, if anything.
Yeah.
That the other one is just an intermediate transparency issue that is driven by accounting standards.
Sure. All right, so you'll note that in the report. All right, is there any other areas that you want to take us to?
No, Chair, that was the highlight.
Okay.
Right, the highlight. Because the rest of the document, it assists and motivates the budget and makes the simplified for understanding.
All right. And colleagues, is there anything else that anybody wants to raise that's not captured in the report? I mean, in the researcher's document? All right, so can I then suggest that much of this information may just need to be properly refined and corrections and typos and stuff. I assume that the document will talk to draft resolutions when the draft report, when it comes in a draft report format, and that in those draft resolutions we'll see one where we recommend
the approval of the annual report. We recommend the approval of the set plan. We recommend the approval of the tariffs and the audit directives specifically as draft resolutions for the House. All right. And so that those are put clearly as questions for decision by the House. And that the rest of it, how much content we put in the body of the report, it essentially reflect that having looked at all these issues, we are now recommending to the House. We're commending this draft plan, this annual report with those specific issues to the House. So the content of the body of the report is more detailed that we just need to refine and make sure that it's an accurate reflection of what the issue, the essence of the issue is about. So can we maybe request your side, AD, we usually work with Adil as our conduit. We have the document, assist us with making sure that it accurately reflects the kind of stuff. And we don't have to include everything here. It doesn't have to be as long as this. I mean, some of the stuff we may want to cut out, really. But that we have a draft report that's in a form come next week Friday that it can actually be considered as a report of the committee. All right. Anybody else who still wants to clarify or ask any questions related to that process before I dispose of this aspect of the meeting? We're all comfortable with the way forward. Yes, AJ.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to comment that we will be supportive of that process, and as and when we receive the final version, we will set aside some time, and I think it will be proper to formally confirm to you that it is consistent with the messages that are contained in the main document.
Yeah.
Rather than do it casually, I think let's formalize it like that.
Yeah. Let's say by Tuesday, let's have this document together with the earlier document on the annual report translated into a draft report of the committee with, at the end, a set of draft resolutions for the House, and say by Tuesday, can it be circulated to everybody? AG's office, ourselves, for comment, and then by Thursday, let's have a refined document ready for our meeting for Friday. Something like that. Would that work for everybody? Okay. All right. Fine. We're done with that. What else have we got left? Mr. Jenkins, the legal advisor, had to leave to see a doctor urgently, so he's not in a position to lead us on the issue of REMCO. But there as well, the request I've made to himself and the committee section is that I've got a document from him that basically sets out the issues relating to the REMCO issue. We need to translate that into a draft report as well of the committee with a recommendation at the end that the House can consider and adopt. And that would mark the conclusion of our work on that one. So let's make sure that well ahead of Friday we have a draft report.
report. I hope the researcher is listening. I mean, the committee secretary is listening, because this is an instruction to yourself. The Ramco issue.
Yes.
We want it to come in draft report form that we can adopt next week, Friday, so that it can be ATC'd and then tabled before the House. All right, so that will take us forward. The other matter was our oversight report. So this is the ANC who went on the oversight. The report itself has been recirculated. We obviously will not be able to adopt it because we don't have the numbers today. But come next week, I don't think we would want to still want to discuss the content and commas and full stop. It should be that come next week, all we're doing is to say yay or nay to the report so that it can proceed. I don't know if amongst us we've had time to look at it and whether we still want to rather do that. Maybe let me say, because we a small number, let's just send out a note to members to say that let them refer any corrections or additions or subtractions directly to yourself by Wednesday, the latest, so that come, in fact, I'll say by Tuesday, because it's been with us since when? The revised? When did you circulate it? Just to remind people that come next week, Friday, we're adopting the report. So anybody who wants to effect any, suggest any corrections by Tuesday, the latest. All right, so that we can also look at the final text before it comes in on Friday. What else needs to be disposed of? Minutes. Again, we can't adopt the minutes. So that is also deferred for next week, Friday. See, the problem with these meetings is that as long as you continue to have meetings that don't correlate week after week, you defer decisions week after week. And it's not very nice to be a chairperson of a committee in Parliament. But I suppose job at a job must be done. All right. Anything else, colleagues? Looks like there isn't much that we can still do. Everything else awaits decisions and we need a call. So on that note, can I thank you, AG, DAG, and your staff for making yourself personally available to COEC so that we could go through all these processes and consider all these matters that we have considered, your annual report, your threat plan, etc. And come next week, hopefully we should be in a position to finalize all the matters and nicely round up our business for the year. Thank you very much. On that note, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you.